From the Roots Up. CIUT 89.5 FM. Toronto.
Lee Morgan. Hey, this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, the host, and with me is Philip Conlon of Classical Underground, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. How are you doing, Phil?
Good evening, Phil.
Cold. It is, well, it's not so cold. It's,
yeah,
it's in between, but it's, I saw snow, which is a signal to get ready for the real stuff. We have a guest coming, or we're not actually sure. She may be in the studio. She might be on the phone. Sandra Farias, who is a Chilean-Canadian who has, as a journalist, has been covering South America, and particularly in recent months, has been, of course, focused on the Argentine story, which we are also following at the Taylor Report. So we really look forward to talking to her. She should be with us at about 5:30. The news, basically, that we want to look into is Mr. Milei, I'm learning to say his name, he's known as the Chainsaw. Chainsaw Milei is in power, is beginning to do things, and there is, hanging over Argentina, is a threat of a general strike because the government has been making sounds about how they they're going to ban picketing by unions and what. So that's going to be quite a story, and we're sure that Sandra Farias can help us with that. Phil, to me, the most important, well, there's a number of important stories, but we should talk about, alert people to. I guess one we should say something about this is 2024, and now it's going to happen. There's going to be an election, maybe, in the United States, perhaps, in November. And as you know, Americans campaign for office 24/7, every year in and year out. But now it's going to get heavy. And there's this is a divided country. That's why Canada should watch and is watching very closely. There is a phobia about of course, Donald Trump. Canada's, certainly the Globe and Mail star, as by the way, previous, he was elected in 2016 that Trump was elected, right? So once again, there is a consensus, almost 100% consensus, major media, that this just cannot happen. For me, the irony is that they say this, but when Donald Trump was in office, the government of Canada did not oppose him, and many of the policies he instituted, Canada went along with. And you say Donald Trump, you want to say Meng Wanzhou. It was his decision to have her picked up, and as part of, frankly, was a trade war. And instead of saying we won't, we did. And the trade war continued after he left office. You could say that the Biden administration is as hostile to China as was Donald Trump. And also, Donald Trump ordered the assassination of an Iranian official in a third country, Iraq, where this official was visiting. He ordered that assassination openly, proudly, and again, without any objection from his Western friends. The rest of the world actually noted it because it's a demonstration of great power, chauvinism. and with wicked results. If we're watching this process, at the current strategy of the Democratic Party and their media allies, and I guess we could say their allies in the police system, seems to be to try to prevent Donald Trump from running for office at all. Even though there are indications that the results probably would be the same result as previous. The slight edge to Biden. But you wouldn't know that from the panic that they're showing and the disrespect for the foundation, which is you have parties, you have leaders. They vie to be the leaders of the country. And then you decide someone can't run. Allegedly, that is practiced by, what do they call them, banana republics? The Americans have a term. It's an insulting term, actually. But they say, but who's being the banana republic? If you say, well, we can't beat him, so we've thought of a way to stop him, which is to get him into a court fight and then ban him, that's not going to mend your political problem. 74 million people voted for him previous. There are indications that the same 74 are going to show up again. And so if you solve it by turning to the courts and police and to prisons, you're in bad shape. But we have the problem of that if they're in bad shape, then we are, because Canada can't disengage from the United States, we're told, though it should, but we're told we cannot. Meanwhile, their war chariot is still very much in action. So moving from that subject of their problem with democracy or fear of it, which they ought to ask themselves, why are we afraid to put this to a vote? today, Secretary of State Blinken is in the Middle East. They call it the Middle East. We've explained that it actually is West Asia. Mideast is just distance from London. It was the old formula. And so it's the middle distance. But actually, it's West Asia. So here you have the prime arsonist and troublemaker arriving to talk to leaders and saying, I'm the fireman, I'm here to put out the fire. And you say, but you're the guy who started the fire. And by the way, the bombing that is continuing and violent, brutal assault on Gaza being perpetrated by the State of Israel, the weapons are being delivered from the United States. And there have been ministers in the Israeli government say, if we didn't get those weapons, we couldn't do this. So here's Mr. Blinken saying that he's there to help, but he's the guy who's providing weapons. And the United States is the country in the United Nations Security Council that has vetoed a ceasefire. They vetoed it. So Blinken, who represents the arming and armament of Israel at this particularly sensitive moment, and who protects through the Security Council veto the Israel from the resolution on ceasefire. Blinken is there, they say, to be doing diplomacy. And this is where the people call themselves the left, progressive, or enlightened, or I don't know, fair, respecting the sovereignty of states, respecting international law and all that. They better ask themselves something. Why is it that the problem country is the one that is called the diplomats, so exercising diplomacy. If there was actually to be diplomatic solution, the representatives of the quartet would be there, the main members of it being the United Nations Agency, Russia, and the U.S. If they were to be there, if Mr. Lavrov was standing beside Secretary of State Blinken, you'd say, oh, well, okay, now we're going to get somewhere. But instead, what we're being told and failing to react against is that the United States owns this issue. And the most dangerous country in the Middle East, South Asia, did I get that right? I'm losing my own language.
West Asia.
We'll take up South Asia someday, but West Asia. The most dangerous country in West Asia is the United States. And when I say they're there, they have military bases, two military bases inside Syria. They have military bases in Iraq where they promised more than, it's some years back, that they were going to leave. But now they're saying, oh, we got attacked by terrorists. This is absurd. Those military bases are the cause of the problem. So you have military bases in Syria. You have U.S. military bases in Syria. And when they come under attack by either forces of the Syrian military, which, as far as I know, there's been no real engagement there, but there are popular actions taken against them by residents, that would be legal residents of the country, which is sovereign. They say, we have to defend ourselves, which is roughly the language Israel uses when they talk about Gaza. Well, we have to defend ourselves. You say, well, why are you there? Remember that the U.S. is in Iraq, for example, because they lied to us that there were weapons of mass destruction. Then they mass destructed Iraq, tore it to pieces. By the way, looted it in the old school looting, which you can look up in the Bible. You want to see a lot of looting going on. It's in the Bible talks about, you know, this kingdom got that kingdom. They took everything and went home. And this is the case of the United States in Iraq. They lied about Libya and then destroyed it. A prosperous Arab country, they destroyed it. And they remained there. So here they are actually the problem. And we've just had this assassination. There have been two or three now in Lebanon. And the New York Times and Western media, which we should all cleanse ourselves of, don't read the news upside down. If you read the New York Times, Washington Post, you're looking at the news upside down. Look at it from the point of view of the people and states in the region. And like dealing, now we have South Africa. Look at them, look at the story of what is going on in Gaza from the point of view of the people of Africa before you worry about what the American point of view. We have the situation where the U.S. today, the New York Times today, is talking about Iranian proxies. And they say Hezbollah, they say that's a proxy. That's actually a lie. They talk about the Yemeni forces, the so-called Houthi. They say that's a proxy. Well, the U.S. actually has its own bases, military bases in these countries. And they have the gall to call people proxies. You know, the reason, Phil, I don't know if you know the history, but remember, but Hezbollah is a result of the Israeli invasion of Lebanon many years ago, where they went all the way to Beirut. And when they were in Beirut, they were shelling the neighborhoods that they didn't like. Those are the good old days. That was Sharon was doing that. So here they were. As a result, there grew to be a completely new phenomenon in Lebanon, which was resistance coming from the communities of South Lebanon, who began to create their own armed forces and ability to fight, and it made the ground burn under the feet of the Israelis, frankly. And as a result, they realized, well, we can't stay here because this population is going to drive us crazy. So they pulled out. And that entity that came into being was Hezbollah. So that's not a proxy of Iran. That is a product of the Lebanese people. It was created by them. Here we have, again, I'll go to this, Blinken there, and no one says, well, long as you're here, why don't you put a stop to extraterritoriality by your good friend, Israel? Israel flies over Lebanese airspace all the time. They use Lebanese airspace, as a matter of fact, to attack targets in Syria. There's where the crisis is that for people who believe that all these matters should be solved and worked out, and it can only be done by states talking to each other, leaders talking to each other. So why does the U.S. and its friend, Israel, both practice extraterritoriality, that is, using missiles to assassinate an Iranian leader in Baghdad, or missiles or planes? In this case, it might have been drones. I don't know if we even know the details. Assassination of leaders in Lebanon. But that overbearing, we have extra power, but that's actually the great violation. It violates, breaks the peace, the standing peace between states. But they do this without any reaction, any punishment. And so here's Blinken, whose country practices extraterritoriality, and he's visiting the region, talking, he says, to leaders, but he's the principal perpetrator. And, you know, Phil, we kidded about the Henry Kissinger. So notice how we have not changed. You remember the thing called shuttle diplomacy? There was a term, shuttle diplomacy. And that's what we have now. The whole world watches, and it's really a kind of self-love, I guess. The Americans and others and Canadians say, oh, see, there's the guy you have to talk to, Mr. Blinken. He's the one. Because he is permitted to get away with the idea that this problem, Israel, Gaza, Egypt, whatever, belongs to U.S. State Department. And there's, to go back, there was a group that was to bring about peace between Palestinians and Israel, and a political arrangement, and it was called the Quartet. So the absent member of that delegation that Mr. Blinken is leading, the absent member is Secretary Lavrov of Russia. if the two of them showed up at the airport together, that it'd be game over. I mean, the Israelis and other, okay, all right, so what do you want? So the real power and the source of our trouble at, is the U.S., who has which has a military presence, an aggressive posture in the middle in that region, with military bases, which when they come under attack, they say we have to defend ourselves, when in fact they have no legal right. And by the way, Phil, you've been sitting on, I know, waiting because I asked you to look this up, but there's a Canadian labor law professor, an international scholar. We hope to have him on the show sometime soon, but we're not able to arrange it today. His name is Michael Link. And he touched on this subject. And I think if you have the passage, you don't have it. Well, watch me. I'm going to summarize it for you. Everybody stand back. What he said was this. The term is used, the right of self-defense. And I'm sorry, but to tell everybody who were been deluded, Israel, Phil has rushed up into the stands and grabbed it from a spectator and has got the pay. What does he say on this subject, self-defense?
These are the words of Professor Link. The right of Israel to defend itself has been regularly raised by Western leaders to justify their support for Israel's assault on Gaza in the aftermath of October 7th, frequently citing Article 51 of the UN Charter. However, while states have the obligation to protect their citizens and others under their control, the use of force in self-defense can only be justified under Article 51 if the armed attack originated from another state. The International Court of Justice stated in 2004 Wall Advisory Opinion that Israel is the occupying power over the Palestinian territory and that Article 51 does not apply when the threat originates from a territory over which it has control. Notwithstanding, Israel would have the right to use proportionate force, strictly within the limits of international law, to apprehend those who killed or kidnapped Israeli civilians.
Yeah. Proportionate. So in other words, yeah. What they used to call a police action.
Yes.
You know, it's very important. They, despite the fact, you know, we should remind our listeners, there used to be 8,000 settlers in Gaza. But Sharon, Ariel Sharon, made the decision that was basically untenable. So they pulled them out. By the way, the way they did it was the same way as the U.S. left Afghanistan. They just left. And then they said, oh, look, chaos. Yes, if you do not negotiate and arrange your departure, you're basically Captain Chaos. You're just saying goodbye. And, you know, as we've heard many people say, guys quitting jobs, they say, you wanted this job, you got it. And they walk out the door. They take the keys with them. They take all the information. They say, you wanted it. You got it. You know, that was like a big joke. So, okay, so they inherited a problem from their approach to this. But as the United Nations and everybody agreed, responsibility for the area remains theirs because they control the seacoast, they control all air traffic, they control movement of the people, the 2.5 million left there. And so... And you know, Michael Link makes a wonderful point. You can find it at his writing on this subject in a publication called The Dawn, I believe. He also published in the Toronto Star roughly the same arguments. But he made a wonderful reminder. Occupying powers are responsible for the health and welfare of the people they're occupying. You know, it's like I was taught, I always bring this up, Marine Corps, if you take a prisoner, you're responsible for that prisoner's health and welfare. You can't harm them. You can't starve them. You can't do anything to them other than to make sure they're prisoners, but they get the humane treatment. Those are the rules. I hate to say it. Those are the rules. But that seems to have been forgotten because people have decided, no, I'm angry. So anger are the rules. And anger, as the proverb says, furnishes no weapon. It's not, anger is not helpful. You have to do, and incidentally, this is for your own good, and this is where Israel, I believe, has a problem. If you tolerate improper conduct towards civilians, and you say, well, we're angry, that means you're demoralized. You're losing control over your armed people. And armed people have to be under really strict discipline, because otherwise they do become demoralized, and the worst elements become the bosses. And that's very dangerous. So that's why an officer has to discipline anyone under him or her and make sure and say to them, listen, we're not a bunch of bandits. We're an army, and we have laws. The country we represent has laws. And as you read there, Phil, and as noted, they have a responsibility. This is not something where you just come and say, I'm in a mood to punish people. That's not your function. So this is part of the weight of the discussion. Incidentally, apropos of all this, there's going to be, I believe, a demonstration coming up in Ottawa. And we're going to find out the date. We're not exactly sure. We think, I believe...
Well, there was one this past Sunday.
Listen, there are demonstrations going on all the time.
So I haven't found one for this week, but I'll keep looking.
My understanding is it's going to be in Ottawa. Right. In other words, a national demonstration. Yeah. We're going to try to find out.
There seems to be one in Toronto every day.
I probably shouldn't be speculating. I think I saw a date of the 14th, but before the Taylor Report is done for the day, we'll tell you the
Phil, can I just mention where people can find Michael Link's article?
Yes, please.
DAWN, D-A-W-N, is an acronym for Democracy for the Arab World Now. And Professor Link contributes regularly scholarly articles to this publication, and it's under DAWNMENA.org.
Thank you. So, continuing on this theme of the various problems, Canada has, we want to make sure we say this too, something we take up on the Taylor Board a lot. On top of all the other dangerous things that are going on, domestically, we have a very dangerous thing is unfolding, and that is the targeting of Chinese Canadians, who are academics and students, with the idea of excluding them or preventing them from attending various universities or studying in certain fields, at the end of the day, is simply xenophobia. There's a case where a judge has made a decision. So you'll find it in the January 4th Globe and Mail. He made a decision that a particular student who had all the credentials and wanted to study in a particular field shouldn't be allowed to study in that field. And he's Chinese. You know, Phil, intellectual property is a very touchy issue. Science is. When Americans have created a myth, for example, that they own science too, and that it's not done collectively. In other words, one scientist talking to another scientist, sharing papers, trying to resolve important problems in their fields. That the police show up and say, no, that belongs to our guys. By the way, this is a self-inflicting wound, because actually we are not cutting-edge, big-time world leaders. I don't want to shock anybody, but we actually haven't put anybody in space. We don't have a rocket program. We actually are not a nuclear power. We have an umbrella. The umbrella is the American bomb. And Chrystia Freeland explains that many times. We have an umbrella, and the Americans have a bomb. So relax. But there is this racial notion. Oh, they're coming and getting our secrets. Actually, it's more likely that we're trying to get their secrets than the other way around. Not that Canada would be trusted to help out, because they're not really part of it. They don't get to sit at the front table anymore or next to the big guy. But Five Eyes is very busy, and they're stealing for sure, because that's what they're paid to do. If you have a bunch of spies, you don't say, stay home. You say, go and get that stuff. That's what you do. So anyway, this Canadian judge decided to block the student. And so this the student, without any evidence, other here's the evidence, here's the way the judge explained it. I'm doing this from memory. January 4th, Globe and Mail, look it up. He said the student is from a hostile state, hostile state actor. And I think you are really into witch hunting now. This is pretty weird, actually. You should probably want to give your head a shake or put it in the ice water. You haven't said anything. First of all, as far as I know, the parliament has not actually defined China as a hostile state. It's a state. I got that. But the concept of hostility, you've already introduced something. And because he has such prejudicial language, you don't need evidence. All you have to do is just say, he makes me uncomfortable. And that is the way Canada is beginning to talk about, and we've covered it over the year, but it has not gone away. And it's about to hit back again big time because these hearings are going to start. And it's all about people gossiping, political gossip. But at the end of the day, they're going to be practice state prejudice against Chinese Canadians and Chinese, which ought to be put a stop to. This is the Tate Report. I think we're going to, if the boss here is agreeable, we might play a little music, and then we will come back and explain what we're going to do next.
America in the forefront of the nuclear nations, and what is it that will make it possible to spend $20 billion of your money to put some clown on the moon? Well, it was good old American know-how, that's what. As provided by good old Americans like Dr. Werner von Braun. Gather round while I sing you of Werner von Braun, a man whose allegiance is ruled by expedience. Call him a Nazi, he won't even frown. A Nazi schmatzi, says Werner von Braun. Don't say that he's hypocritical. Say rather that he's apolitical. Once the rockets are up, who cares where they come down? That's not my department, says Werner von Braun. Some have harsh words for this man of renown, but some think our attitude should be one of gratitude, like the widows and cripples in old London town, who owe their large pensions to Werner von Braun. You too may be a big hero, once you've learned to count backwards to zero. In German or English, I know how to count down. And I'm learning Chinese, says Werner von Braun.